And welcome to another edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides, coming at you from the stream of free radio at freakradio.org, and hopefully one of these days at 101.3 FM again. Operating under some technical difficulties with equipment today, which is kind of unusual, so this is really going to be put together in bits and pieces, sort of microphone to speaker, and I apologize for a perhaps less than ideal sound quality, and that's perhaps often the case, but it's going to be, might be particularly the case today, but hopefully it'll still be audible and useful, or at least entertaining in some way. The stuff I'm going to talk about today is going to be a coverage of this last city council meeting on Tuesday, the evening session. I didn't get to the afternoon session. I haven't got too much to say about it at the moment. Maybe I'll gear up and check it out on Sunday when I come back and do a longer show. After the evening session was one of great concern to me because I was putting a lot of focus into encouraging the community to fight back against the notion that the closing the Ross campground, as I call that encampment behind the Gateway Plaza shopping center, closing it on March 15th, as is intended, is really ridiculous, abusive, I wouldn't even call it penny wise, I just call it straight fiscally foolish, and a disservice both to the broader community and to the homeless people that live there. Sort of a spoiler alert, that's what happened. They stopped the closing of the Ross camp, maybe. It was specifically passed as a resolution. I'll hopefully be playing that particular part of the resolution, which was made by Justin Cummings, council member and the fourth person in the sometime 4-3 majority that the sometime progressives have on the city council on homeless issues and some other matters. The issues proposed by Drew Glover were kept off the agenda as any kind of action items. Only two, as I reported last Sunday, made it onto the agenda with actual staff reports. Those were the homeless emergency, which I'm always a little confused about whether it's a shelter emergency or a state emergency or a general emergency. It was to allow for either getting more state funding more easily and or, and I'm not sure which, whether it was an or both, also allowing for the loosening of requirements, let's say, to set up transitional encampments, which really is the only realistic alternative for folks who are outside right now. I mean, they do it themselves. They set up places where they sleep, places where they get together, spend the day, and they have to. There ain't really any other options. They're being driven out of all the other public spaces, or many of them. Even if they have their own vehicles, they're being hounded around town, some of them, or at least these are the complaints I've been getting from some folks. Anyway, we're going to be getting into that, as well as a visit out to the Ross camp, where I had a number of interviews with folks, but also I recorded the lengthy presentation by Anthony Prince, attorney from Berkeley, who's helping Marysville homeless folks. He's also a statewide organizer for Union of the Homeless, and he made it to Santa Cruz and will be making it back, he tells us, next week on Wednesday to continue working with a group of people out at Ross Camp who he's training as to how they assert their rights to resist improper authorities who come and tell them, get the fuck out, even if there's no place for them to go. Because there's been a court decision that, of course, makes that unconstitutional as well as being inhumane, ridiculous, and brutal for people who are trying to carry everything they have around with them.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make and ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. history's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
Begin with the City Council Tuesday night on February 26th, which there was actually a protest held there, although the protest essentially was sort of sidelined by the fact that there was a large sort of anti-homeless NIMBY rally that was held. It wasn't billed as such. It was billed as a concerned rally by people up on Delaware Avenue or concerned about RVs being allowed to spend the night on Delaware Avenue up to 72 hours to have an additional 6 hours to stay there without having to move their vehicles. You have to move every 72 hours in Santa Cruz or risk for getting a ticket for, and maybe even towed for, the abandoned vehicle or the stored vehicle ordinance, which I think is a, not sure if it's just a state law or it's authorized by state law, but it's what the police enforce and often over-enforce, which I've talked about, responding to bogus complaints or those which people in RVs say are bogus complaints and claims they've been there for longer than 72 hours when they're not. Anyway, the only two proposals to actually make it to the City Council agenda, action items, really, on the evening homelessness session, and that was really the entire evening session was on homelessness last Tuesday, were two items, one of which was this Delaware Avenue eliminate immediately the parking restrictions. And this became, was used as a sort of a hot draw by, and it's not too clear whether it was orchestrated by out and out hate merchants like Steve Schacht, who's reportedly behind Santa Mierda. My apologies, Steve, if it's not you, but that's what has been alleged. And if it's not true, then I'm in error. But I would be happy to withdraw that. If you'd like to deny it publicly, that's fine. That's a website called Santa Shit and Mierda, you know, is shit in Spanish or some such thing. And it's a weekly series of attacks on homeless people and denunciations of them as criminals and cowardly and abusive and spoiled and bums and crazies. I mean, you name it. It's the usual series of stereotypes wrapped up into a weekly report. Sort of, I try to do a twice weekly opposite kind of thing, and I guess people will do what they will do. Lots of folks were there for this Delaware Avenue thing. In fact, they wanted to flood the chambers. They lined up an hour in advance. We had planned this protest in front of City Council at 6 o'clock. Didn't get too many people to show for that, although Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs and Joe Schultz from the India Joe's restaurant and a number of other folks did show up. 2 weeks ago, we had an actual forum there where we had a speak out. This time, we had our work cut out for us, just holding spots in line so we could get into the meeting, speak in a timely way. And for me, I wanted to be able to report, walk around, and also be able to, on occasion, make comments from the audience. Certainly not disruptive comments, but, you know, things like applauding, supporting things that were positive, making my feelings clear on a number of issues, which I think is, frankly, not just the right of the audience, but the responsibility of the audience. Much of the evening was taken up with, first the staff, who spent a lot of time talking about the future, talking and planning that they were going to be doing, and the limited amount of in contacts they had with folks out at Ross Camp, and the supposed progress or lack of progress of the shelter alternatives that they were claiming would be available on March 15th, when they are going to, they had already posted out at the camp, they were going to close the Ross Camp, which has hundreds of people in it now, and seems to be growing all the time, in spite of the fact that it's looks a bit maxed out as far as space goes, but people I'm not sure if they found other spaces yet, but I haven't heard gotten a lot of good information on that. I did distribute a flyer saying what was left off the agenda, because it was, you might say, well, you know, the mayor sets the agenda. She can do whatever she wants, along with sort of in consort or collusion or conspiracy with the city manager. Collusion, certainly. And you would think that the city council, particularly a majority of the city council, if it wants an item on the agenda, it can direct the mayor to put it on the damn agenda. And that was what Drew Glover thought was going to happen last week. I should say, I'm sorry, 3 weeks ago when he presented his items, a number of them that a lot of us had contributed to. And those items included this one item, which did get on the agenda eventually, but seemingly was, one would suspect it was put there as a way of mobilizing folks who wanted to defeat it and to, in essence, kind of team up and prep up for defeating other items, other homeless items that were coming up right behind, but not on the February 26th agenda. Items that were prepared were supposed to be on the February 12th agenda. They've been presented well in advance, a week before, for the mayor to put them on the agenda, including staff reports, as is seemingly required. And the mayor refused to do it, or declined to do it, or forgot to do it. It's a little unclear. And that really pissed off a lot of us, and including Drew Glover, whose items they were, along with those of two other council members, Brown and Crone. And as a consequence, there was a kind of a public brouhaha about it a bit at the city council, where Martin Watkins, the mayor, denounced Glover, pointedly ignored him at certain points when he tried to respond, and in essence sort of led a right-wing old guard chorus denouncing Glover. And it's a kind of seemed to me like a preemptive attack on his pointing out that she was excluding stuff that a Democratic majority wanted to at least discuss, if not pass. And those items that were excluded, and which at the end of that February 12th agenda, that meeting, were officially and specifically directed to be put on this agenda from 2 days, 2 days ago, the February 26th agenda, included a number of things which still didn't appear on the agenda 2 weeks later, even though in this situation they had been voted on as a put them on the agenda direction by a majority of the city council on February 12th. And the items that were kept off the agenda, which I mentioned in a flyer which I distributed to a number of people, many of whom didn't want to read it because they were there, I think, to oppose the only items that did appear, or at least the item to essentially extend parking time at night on Delaware, which meant that people could, as I said, stay for up to 72 hours and wouldn't have to leave every day, come back after the night was over, and kind of crawl around town looking for a place to park. Sleep. Didn't really make it on the agenda explicitly. Was a report identifying all potential locations for a transitional encampment on city-owned property and any identified opportunity sites on private property. And that, I think, has been kicked over to the next agenda, although there was a failure at the end of this session to direct the city council, the city mayor and the city manager, to put specific items on the next agenda. Perhaps they just gave up, because they saw that making these kinds of even specific requirements aren't good enough for Mayor Watkins and City Manager Martine Bernal, or maybe they were exhausted at 1 o'clock in the evening, or maybe they were demoralized by the fact that Justin Cummings, although he did vote for one key item, eliminating the closure date of the Ross Camp at the moment, so that it is no longer slated to close on March 15th, I hope. There's a little ambiguity there, and I'll talk about that as well. The other two items that actually made the agenda were, of course, voted down or simply not voted on at all. The homeless emergency, or they were submerged in this ongoing freight train, a very slow-moving but endless freight train of chitter-chatter, chugga-chugga, consult, let's talk it over for a couple more meetings, come up with the best smart solutions some months down the road, caravan of hopeful sentiments by City Manager Bernal and his go-to team, Susie O'Hara and Tina Scholl, Assistant City Managers, or titles or something like that. Didn't make it on the agenda, which I predicted in this flyer, was a report and recommendation based on the ordinances to be submitted on the establishment of transitional encampments, which needed to be essentially authorized so that private agencies can do what the city government is refusing to do, and people are having to find their own way. So they start camping behind Ross, they camp at San Lorenzo, they camp in front of the post office, because the city is not willing to take the necessary steps to set up or to allow private groups to set up authorized encampments. Also off the agenda, that was directed to be on the agenda on February 12th and was presented to the mayor in January to go on the agenda on February 12th, but certainly was supposed to be on the agenda on February 26th, was a draft ordinance amending the municipal code for a permit process for those kinds of encampments. No draft ordinance appeared. And there is a report and a timeline to enter into negotiations with UCSC to lease a safe parking program. Wasn't there. And, I mean, they discussed some of these things. They mentioned them briefly, these two, I'm tempted to say lackeys or representatives. These two, Tina Scholl and Susie O'Hara, who spent a lot of time describing how they were really working really hard and all these things, but they needed longer timelines and so forth. But there was no mention, except by Drew Glover himself, of the proposals he had brought. And the proposals were not on the agenda as staff reports, even the staff reports he had himself and his interns had put together. So the entire thing was derailed at least twice. And there are those who talked about it being derailed in January when Councilmember Brown was trying to do something similar. And they didn't, and Crone also tried to get stuff on the agenda in January. It didn't happen. It's a kind of a right-wing coup because these three conservative council members, Watkin, Myers, and Matthews, could not win an election while they weren't running. Myers is the one who won. Since they lost their majority when the right-wingers left the council, Terrazas and Chase and so forth, Rochelle Naroyan lost also the election as well as her seat. They're using this backdoor process. And it was mentioned by a couple of speakers. I may play that, probably not today, because it's a short show. In any case, also off the agenda, a report from, this is key, Parks and Recreation regarding the reopening of public facilities and bathrooms based on the materials submitted on February 12th. And what Glover wanted to do is get the city council, in essence, both to direct the bathrooms at Loudoun Elson City Hall and elsewhere be reopened, maybe some of them at night. And also that if there is any closures planned, that be limited in time, and then it go before the city council. Well, instead, that was completely derailed by, it only reached the agenda at 1 o'clock in the evening, and I should say in the morning, sorry. And at that point, they simply dumped a lot of the stuff with no vote. There was no discussion, no vote. It was all done as a matter of sort of in-house commentary by the two women who were representing the city manager's traditional, we let Tony Elliott of the Parks and Rec Department close whatever bathrooms he wants, whenever he wants, as long as he wants, regardless of how many people have to run around, you know, holding their pants up or taking a crap in the bushes. That's not a matter of our concern. I talked to Elliott very briefly at the meeting and said, what about the bathrooms? He sort of muttered something about Grant Park. And at the Conscience in Action meeting, which was a meeting we held yesterday, I guess a couple of our members are going to go try and talk to Elliott, and we're also planning to establish do another protest, another public demonstration, hopefully a little more forceful this time. Maybe we can present Tony with some sanitary bags and suggest that since you didn't have the bathrooms to dispose them of, he could go dispose them. I dispose of them. I don't know. I don't want to. The final shape and smell of that particular protest has not yet been really worked out. So we're kind of, you know, chugging away on that one. Anyway, let's get to the positive side of all this. That's the negative side. It's really, frankly, more important than the positive side. But because these are positive issues to allow for people places to park at night and sleep, or at least to remove the penalties for what they're doing, unless they're engaging in some criminal behavior, like, you know, wasteful behavior, waste on the sidewalk, or disturbing other people nearby. That's something which they can always, there are currently laws to address that. Also, if I have a program that actually can set up real campgrounds so that people have to stop crowding into the Ross camp. And they don't have to pretend they're going to find spaces in March that don't really exist, but that keep being proclaimed with wide-eyed smiles and great reassurance by Scholl and O'Hara. To my disgust and frankly outrage that they do this from the comfort of their little privileged seats in the city council as the staff at the side who... It's putting out a whole load of misleading propaganda about real shelter spaces and opportunities and giving everybody else 2 minutes to speak or less. The positive thing was, and though it wasn't on the agenda either, really, and that worried me a great deal, and I mentioned that at some length in previous broadcasts, was an update and possible reconsideration of the planned closure of the Gateway Ross encampment, which was, before this council meeting, slated to close by March 15th. Now I'm going to play Justin Cummins' comments on this, which were good ones in the main. I don't agree with all of them, but he did make a resolution, in essence, to stop the closure. And here it is, or here's his discussion of it and his resolution.
Earlier, around homelessness and the state that we're living in Santa Cruz, and the fact that we have so much homeless in our community. And I think that it's important that everyone remember that we are considered the fourth most expensive place to live in the world. And that's given the fact that we have a tourism economy that is unable to keep up with paying their workers the amount it costs to rent a place to live in this town. And, you know, I know that a lot of people had things to say about people who live in their cars and in their RVs, but these are also people who are working, tax-paying people in our community. So I think that it's really important that we remember that. And for those people who maybe don't have jobs and live out of their vehicles, there may be barriers that we're unaware of that's keeping them from working, or, you know, maybe they're receiving other things like Social Security that allows them, you know, to live off very little, and that's the only way that they're able to survive this community.
Now, you have to remember that this was said by Justin, I'm not sure if it was immediately before or immediately after, but it was really close to his vote to kill the proposal to allow people in RVs to remove the signage along Delaware, where there are very few houses, I'm told, and also which is directly in the coastal zone. So those signs, which never got permits from the local coastal commission, as they should have, and they were supposed to, are illegal anyway. He voted not to keep those signs up. In other words, in violation of Drew Glover's resolution to remove them. And so while he gives lots of nice talk about how we care a lot about those homeless folks, clearly his real concern is the apprehensions of the large mob that came to city council denouncing the Delaware thing. He couches it, and I think he probably believes this, in language about how we have to go out to the local communities and consult with them. We have to get their buy-in. We certainly have to hear what they have to say and their thoughts. And who can really disagree with the notion that you want to go to the community before you make significant impacts that change their situation or that, they would say, impact their quality of life? And that's, of course, what a lot of the arguments were. I'm not going to play a lot of this stuff. You can find it on the website, the Santa Cruz City Council website. But really, more important to me, and I think what is really true, is that the public streets are public. The neighborhood may not like people have people of who they don't like or trust because of how they look or because of their class status or because they've heard bad things about them, but not necessarily because they've had actually bad experiences with those particular people. No particular people, but they, as a class, they've decided they're a dangerous or a criminal or a crazy or a druggie or a drunkie class. They don't want them in their neighborhood, and therefore they have a right to sort of exclude them. But they don't. They don't own the streets. They don't own the sidewalks. Everybody pays taxes in this town who uses, you know, who buys things here and who uses services here. And so they have no business directing the city council how to just essentially allow for people to proceed to act in terms of what their actual rights are as human beings in public spaces. And that's the problem with this kind of rhetoric. Everyone wants to believe that they're very humane and very liberal and really care about and compassionate about the homeless folks. Or maybe they're having compassion fatigue or something, and that's understandable too. Because they've had some bad experiences with a few people. Or they've heard stories of bad experiences. But the real rubber meets the road is what does he do when it comes to such a simple thing as saying, essentially, the police should follow the law, and the city should follow the law, and not place signs where they shouldn't be, and also not allow police to go in and tell people that they can't be there because they've been there for 72 hours when they haven't, because some neighbor wants them gone, and use other kinds of pressures to get them out of there, just to satisfy the neighbors. Even if it's like, I mean, this ironic, this is an African-American council member here. Now, there are all kinds of people views, but he was a person elected also on a human rights platform, too. Although maybe I'm showing my racist side by saying that, well, he's black. So's Drew, you know, Glover. Boy, they should have similar views. They, you know, but they did run on a kind of a ticket together. And they went up to the campus and they urged people to vote in a certain way. And I think there were expectations that there was going to be a series of sort of objectives that they shared. And maybe they still do. I'm concerned that Justin Cummings has been sort of subsumed by the conservative majority who want to influence him in order to maintain their power, and that's what seems to have happened, at least on a number of votes. Or maybe he simply always was that way. Who knows? Well, it's nice to hear these kind of support in principle and theory for homeless people and that they're human beings. You just heard. The issue is whether he wants to vote for actual practical programs that support this. And all his votes that evening were in the other direction, or at least the direction of delay, which was and support of the city manager's proposals, which in essence are, we're doing just fine. We're taking, you know, we're going to be spending some new state and other kinds of monies on in conjunction with the county on finding adequate bed space or floor space for homeless folks who are being dislodged from the Ross camp. Now, here he took issue with that, and he said, until such time as there actually is such space, we'll be reexamining this both at the February 26th meeting, he said this 2 weeks before, and at the March meeting, the mid-March meeting, I guess would be, I don't know, March 12th, to see if that's actually the case. But until then, the police went out there and said, you got to leave on the 15th, it's coming up, get going. And that, according to the reports of folks out there, has produced some amount of fear and consternation in the camp. Anyway, let's hear some more of what he had to say, because, as I said, the rubber did meet the road on his vote on the Ross camp, which was, it's not going to be closed on the 15th at the moment, given the fact that there's lack of space for places or places for people to go.
I go down to the camp at least a couple times a week. I've actually, I think at a federal And I talk to people who work down there, and many of the people who work in that community do have compassion for the folks who are at the camp. And some people from that camp also go in and spend their money in those coffee shops and in those businesses because they need things too, and they also spend money in our community. So I think that it's also very bad for people to, demonize the people who live in that camp. And having gone down there, a number of the people who were here tonight, they walked me through and said, hey, come on in if you want to meet people who are in the camp and if you want to talk to them. So I don't like, a lot of the language going around saying that that everyone down there is a criminal. And because I'd also point out that they deal with the same things we deal with as well. There's a lot of people down there who, as with people in our community, feel a more secure sense of safety and they feel a sense of community there. There are people who are there who were using drugs, and there are people there who may be up to no good and stealing. And, just because they don't have homes and these things are happening there doesn't mean that there are people with homes who aren't doing the same things within our community. So, the types of activities that we see happening there, we also have with people who are in sheltered populations in our community as well. With that being said, I know that the staff is moving forward expeditiously trying to get things on board, and they're really trying to do it in a way that's very thoughtful. I do have some concerns, and there's a lot of people in the community with concerns around the closure date and just the rate at which we're able to move people into shelters. So at this point, I want to make a motion to remove the closure date at the Gateway Camp and to provide signage at the camp about alternatives, including the VFW Hall, the Salvation Army, and information around the other alternatives that are going to be coming on board, and that we move to finding a site for a transitional camp, and we continue to explore the idea of a transitional camp. And just so people know, a big reason why this is happening is because there's fear not only in the community of folks who are living there, but also I've been hearing from people who live in the areas and people who live in other parts of Santa Cruz who've actually expressed that while the camp isn't perfect, it's something for people right now.
And again, a quick note, exploring the idea of transitional encampments was something he and others did not support as a or raise up as an issue that it should have been on the previous or was supposed to be on the previous agenda, was specifically slated to be on this agenda, and it's just kicked down the road again and left in the hands of the city staff to explore, which is naive at best, in my view. That's the very reason that Drew Glover put together his own interns to prepare staff reports to bring issues to directly to the city council a vote, so there would be a specific timeline created, and it wouldn't just be at the discretion of the city manager, and then, as far as the mayor goes, putting it on the agenda whenever she felt like it, if she felt like it again, if she felt generous that day or something. Of course, the real issue is if the mayor and the city manager feel they can disobey the law or the procedures of the council handbook, it's not the law, but it's the process that they're supposed to go by, which states if you have something in by Wednesday of the week before, and you have three council members and you have staff reports. At least this was the opinion of David Chirazis. Although if you look at the actual wording of the city council handbook, it does actually say it's at the discretion of the mayor and the city manager. So what you have to do is bind them at the council session that happened before, so that it happens the next time. But even when that happened, as it did on February 12th, they didn't do it. So what do you do then? Well, at this particular council meeting, even though all these council members, I presume, were aware of it, at least the four progressives that we presumably have some hope and confidence, well, I have neither, but they are those who have represented themselves as furthering these issues. If they can't follow up on the clear violations of city council practice and procedure, at least raise it publicly in a way that is visible to the community so they can get support, and that was not raised at this council meeting, then we're in, well, we're in big trouble to begin with. We never got out of big trouble. But it's something you've got to be really aware of as what's happening here at City Council, as being this, really this profound silence about these issues. Maybe Drew Glover is afraid of being criticized again and called a sexist pig again, or he wasn't called a sexist pig, but he was called a sexist and a bully and so forth. When in fact, the bullying that is going on is happening from the mayor's chair, and it's happening from the city manager's seat. And the kind of enabling that's going on is happening from the vice mayor's chair. That's Justin Cummings. He's the vice mayor. He should be acting on this. Now, I haven't talked to him, and I actually have a meeting tomorrow with Mayor Watkins. I usually do a free radio meeting. I'm hopeful I can go to it. I'm having kind of some troubles physically in the last couple days, a nasty cold virus that is making me sound a little hoarse, I'm afraid. So my apologies to those listening in that regard. Anyway, let's hear the rest of Justin's resolution. The clapping, by the way, was me, and Justin cut that short, and he requested no clapping, which I then ignored, because I feel, one, it's worthy to clap, and two, it's really important to tell the audience that the city council should not direct you as to how to behave at a city council meeting in terms of expressing your opinions. It's not a good practice, even if you like what a particular council member is doing. It's not his prerogative to do that, and it's a bad practice because people are so tamed and domesticated at these meetings. They're afraid of authority. They want to take the right path. They want to know how to present themselves. They haven't done this kind of stuff before, and so you have to provide people with new models as to how to behave at these places. And disrespect of abusive behavior by a city council, I think, is an important kind of thing to model, frankly. And I try to do that on occasion when it's appropriate. A lot of the time at these city council meetings, it is appropriate. Let's hear some more.
We have to remember that it's winter. We still have a lot of storms coming, and this year has been exceptionally wet and cold. And if people didn't have this type of shelter, since we're not able to provide shelter ourselves, we may have actually been dealing with more deaths associated to people getting hypothermia, and we wouldn't know where these people are because we wouldn't have they wouldn't be concentrated in one area. And so I'm going to move forward with that motion at this point in time.
Second.
That was going to be my question.
Okay, my question is on that.
I believe there were.
We have a motion on the.
Did we have one?
And that also can be found, if you want to see the video of it, on Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz, which is a Facebook page that Brent Adams puts up regularly. And he was doing that. He was doing that on that evening. He was recording that. This is a bit from his recording. I also was recording, but unfortunately, that's one of those recordings that's gotten lost under the desk or some such thing. And my apologies for that. This took place within resolutions, embedded within resolutions, and it was a little hard for all of us to follow, me to follow, and I think for some others too. The O'Hara, who I've been giving a lot of flack to, and I think frankly deservedly so, sort of did a little, side trip, but that doesn't quite cover it. She pointed out that the county had already passed a resolution itself, since the city and the county are kind of supposedly working together on this, to essentially get rid of the Ross camp is what they want to do. And if they can do it, you know, nicely, that's nice. If they can find places for people, that's good. But that's not their primary objective. Their primary objective is to make sure it's gone. And they've got a four-person majority on the city council that doesn't want to do that. Thank goodness, and it's a rare situation that has arisen, and that's good. But again, the Ross camp is no paradise. It is a place for community. You're going to hear in the next hour some conversations that have gone on out there. But what O'Hara then responded to, well, we'll let her speak for herself, and I will then interrupt with my comments that had I been there, it had been, I mean, I was there, but had I been able to speak freely, or had I been in conversation with her, this is, you'll hear me, well, I'll be interrupting.
Susie, we know what it means, but just to clarify that. So they will, they'll come back with some recommendations to please.
Few.
This is Susie O'Hara.
Points of clarification or questions. So with the joint action plan, that's obviously both a board approved and a council approved plan, and there's a tremendous number of resources that are being put into not only outreaching folks at the encampment around their sheltering opportunities, but
now this was denied by the people at the camp that we talked to. They didn't notice a tremendous number of resources, and the reports that reached the council were very few people were either accepting the resources or feeling that they were adequate resources, and they weren't out there that much anyway so far. So I think she's misstating it. She's exaggerating it. Again, the idea is to provide a nice protective fluffy cover for what is actually a removal of an encampment, which is the standard practice in cities that want to remove encampments. They have to present something for their liberal constituencies to show that they're not acting in an overtly fascist manner, which of course they are, because they're not really providing alternatives. They're destroying people's homes, they're seizing their property, they're sending them out into what can be toxic conditions for them, and they fundamentally don't give a shit. You might say, well, you mean they're cruel, unusually cruel people? No. But they're operating as a part of a machine that is operating in a standard cruel fashion. And you know that machines like this have operated throughout history, particularly against poor people on behalf of the rich, who feel they're isolated from poor people, they don't feel any real responsibility to poor people, they have no understanding of the real condition of poor people. What poor people do, except when they rise up and start burning their palaces, doesn't have much impact on them. And so they have a much different attitude towards them. Or as Carol Denny put it in her song, the rich will never be poor. Let's hear some more from Susie O'Hara, and then you'll get even more from me.
Building those opportunities and developing kind of that path to transition for folks.
This kind of language about path to transition, which talks about housing that doesn't exist, is so fundamentally misleading and deceptive, it sticks in my craw whenever I hear it.
Would recommend there is a 2x2 committee meeting this Thursday, ensuring that this direction is brought back to the 2x2 committee.
And the 2x2 committee is one of those groups that where council members and board of supervisor members sit down and scheme together. And Cummings is a part of this 2x2 committee, and so he's kind of been talked into a stake in this whole matter, probably because he cares about this issue. I would hope.
In case there is a need to modify the joint action plan as it relates to the coordinated kind of relationship between the city and the county, because there is a ton of operational coordination that's around that. And then two, it would be good for staff who's working through the operations of this to have a sense of the intentionality, the overall intentionality to close with appropriate shelter options. So we
what she's really saying here, this is my translation, and, you know, she's not here to affirm it or deny it, is the county wants to go ahead with closing the Ross camp. We're all planning to do it, and so don't get in the way of it. So now you're saying that we aren't going to do it. So, and what she's going to end up saying is something to the effect of, let's make sure that we make it clear that our real intention here is to close the Ross camp on March 15th.
Can continue to move towards that, because what I'm hearing with posting signs that there's alternative shelter opportunities does not necessarily evoke people must move. So I think we need to have a little bit more clarity around that, or you can have those discussions at the two-by-two, but I think it's important, sitting from where I'm sitting, trying to develop kind of this operational plan, which, quite frankly, day by day is a new task that we kind of still have marching orders to complete elements of those tasks. For instance, with the idea that we would return on the 12th with a full update as to the potential of providing those suitable alternatives for folks.
In other words, you're saying, wait, we'll come back on March 12th. We'll have all these things all worked out. You don't really want to close it on March 15th. It's all in motion. Come on, guys. I mean, this, we're your staff. We're the most important people to address here, not the people you're throwing out of the Ross camp.
I'll just agree that I think that is definitely something that came to mind for me in terms of this motion, knowing that also we were going to be receiving an update on the 12th, and given any type of update that didn't necessarily result in meeting the intention of having available space so that we felt comfortable closing the camp by the 15th, then we can make that modification at that time.
In other words, the mayor says, we'll wait till the 12th. We'll tell everybody until then that the camp is closing on the 15th, so get the fuck out or else. But if there's some changes on the 12th, which we know, if we have any sense, there isn't going to be space for these people on the 15th of March or the 15th of April or the 15th of April in 2025, for that matter, honestly speaking, not to mention the rest of the homeless community in Santa Cruz, then let's just wait until March 12th and let's not confuse things, and let's get Justin Cummings to modify his motion. That was my fear as I watched this from the side.
But that would also be in collaboration with the county as originally designed. So I share the same concern, and that's why.
And of course, please collaborate with the county, she says to her vice mayor colleague, Justin Cummings. I mean, after all, we have elevated you into this two-by-two committee, right? I mean, you certainly want to go along with all these hardworking people whose staff you've been commending so mightily. And that, of course, is why I'm always upset when people like Micah Posner, when he was on the council, or Drew Glover, for that matter, when he speaks about how wonderful the staff is doing, which doesn't quite comport with his private views, I don't think. And because when you start locking yourself into praising the staff, you're not only being hypocritical, you're spreading misinformation. You're either being naive, or you're being hypocritical, but you're not doing a service. And you're not really helping the staff either. I mean, if they're fucking up, they need to be told they're fucking up and how they're fucking up and directed in the right direction, which is to say the left direction.
I won't support the motion as it is.
And that's the mayor. I will not support the motion, meaning I will not support Justin Cummings' attempt to stop the closure.
I respect the concern. I think one of the things that's been coming out of the camp, and I also think that we should be moving forward towards, you know, getting enough beds and spaces online so that we can close that location. And I'll say that there are issues with it being at that location, including risks to public safety. We've heard from the fire chief about how it's hard to get like safety services, like emergency medical services in there. There's environmental health concerns. And so I think that what we're hoping is that we do find these other alternatives that come online. And I think that the fear that's been coming through the camp and concerns within the community are around the fact that the language that's been used is geared towards only really focusing on closing the camp and not providing people with alternatives. And as a result, people who are in the camp and people who are in the surrounding communities have expressed concern, because what they don't want to see happen is that the services don't come online, we have a firm date, and then we shut the camp down and people are kind of scattering all throughout the city, and that there's turmoil at the camp in terms of it being shut down. There's been talk about acts of civil disobedience, and then the potential for the lawsuit around Matthews versus Boise. And so I feel like for myself and I feel like I speak for a demographic in the community, that if we have alternatives and we can say, okay, we have, you know,
X number of beds, and this is what the city and the county have committed to, and we're gonna now set a date, and we're gonna be closing this site down. I think that at that time, it's better to have a firm date, because otherwise, people are just living in this constant state of fear, and I think that in the community, it's been stirring a lot of tension as well.
Okay. Thank you.
So, thank you for the clarification. So we have a motion by Councilmember Vice Mayor Cummings, seconded by Councilmember Glover. Further discussion, Councilmember?
Can we separate the motion?
How would you like to have that motion separated?
This is Cynthia Matthews again. She's part of this minority. Right now, it's a minority of the three who want to close the camp on the 15th, come hell or high water, or make it real clear. If you want to be very charitable, you say, well, they're quite convinced that there are adequate spaces for people, and that by the 15th they'll have been found, and if not, well, people made a good effort, and that'll be happening soon after. And in any case, it's enough of a significant health and safety hazard. It has to be done, and other avenues have to be found. People have to find some way to address this issue. And Santa Cruz is not a large hospital. You can go on and on with the excuses, but the fact remains, get the fuck out on the 15th is what these three, Watkins, Matthews, and Myers, want to do. And here's Matthews' latest attempt to further that objective.
One is remove the closure date and revisit the date as alternatives come online. I think that's one motion, and then providing signage about alternatives and revising the shelter crisis statement.
The second motion. That works for me. So let's go ahead and vote.
In other words, they don't want to remove the signs. They're going to vote on one vote to keep the signs that it's closing, but they're not, and then the other one, because they know, she knows she's lost, Matthews knows she's lost this vote about keeping the Ross camp, going it into a closed situation on the 15th. It's going to be kept open because Cummings is going to vote for it, and the other three are too. So is she saying that she doesn't want the signs up saying that? In other words, we'll keep terrorizing people anyway? Maybe I'm misunderstanding this. Let's see if I can understand this further. Again, remember, this is all happening at 1 o'clock at night or thereabouts.
Vote on the first motion.
I also say that I'll invite staff to include any language in that signage about, like, the closure of the camp. So.
Okay. So all those in favor of...
So Cummings does get in the fact that if you're going to change the signage, make sure you don't add the clap is closing. Because we're not deciding it's closing until we've actually got these. You can say we're going to find you all kinds of wonderful things here, there, and everywhere, but don't say we're closing the camp. And don't say we're closing the camp on the 15th. And that is what he, I think, appropriately interjected. But if he hadn't, you would have these two resolutions, one which talks about, no, the camp isn't closing on the 15th, but the signs are saying we're going to be closing the camp, you better find your shelter or else. Even though, frankly, there's no shelter for the majority of people at the camp, and there's no shelter for the overwhelming majority of people in the homeless community to be found.
Item number one, which is to remove the closure date of the camp and revisit the date as alternatives come online. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
So that passes with Councilmember Crone, Glover, Brown, and Vice Mayor Cummings in support. Councilmember Matthews, Councilmember Myers, and myself voting against.
I have a question on that action. I am concerned about the fact that this is a departure from our jointly adopted agreement with the county, and I'd like to get suggestions from staff on how we can send as strongly worded as possible indication to the county that we intend to move quickly, we intend to prioritize the projects that you're working on right now to get those additional sites online. I don't want them to think Santa Cruz is bailing on you.
She really wants, of course, the motion to say we're moving quickly to close the camp. But that's exactly what they voted not to do. So she's attempting to reverse it, but claiming that she's using slightly alternate language, which is we're moving quickly to find alternative stuff to be helpful and not bail on you. Now perhaps I'm being unduly suspicious and apprehensive and not recognizing that Matthews may be respecting the will of the majority here. And if so, I apologize in advance to Cynthia, but frankly, I wonder, and based upon a rather harsh and militant view of hostility toward the Glover recommendations generally, to expanded public comment, to the I'll probably have to draw back here because I was getting more and more tired throughout that meeting, but let's let her speak for herself.
So, and we can go ahead.
Just language on that.
And just also as an FYI, we'll be meeting with the 2x2 this later this week, so we can go ahead and also express that.
But I think that message has to come from the council.
Sure. Okay. Does the council feel comfortable with that?
Yes.
Okay.
So, now that's the problem. What are they feeling comfortable with here? Cynthia Matthews saying, is she making it real clear? Yes, the date is, there's no closing date, but we're still going to keep helping you with finding shelter beds. But she wants language. In other words, it's not enough for her to these representatives in 2 days or the next day, whenever that meeting of the 2x2 committee is, to tell the people in the county, look, we're going to keep standing up for the right to, you know, to try to find the services that are necessary to close this campground. And we're not going to back away from that, but we're not going to close it, you know, until that happens. And we made it real clear that March 15th date is not when it's going to be closed. And we are not setting a date because that's what the council majority says. Now, we'd like to. Because, that's the game we've been playing for the last 3 years, which is to constantly, you know, throw the goalposts ahead of you and say, we're extending the goalpost. We don't have to find shelters next week. It'll be next year sometime. We told you that you could keep the River Street Campground open until April of 2019, but no, we're closing it in October. We said we were going to open up a transitional encampment in the summer of 2018, but we couldn't do that. We were going to open up a car park in the fall of 2018, but, you know, the neighbors objected, and so really we couldn't do that. In other words, there's no commitment to providing services. There's only a commitment to endless discussion of the issues and good intentions, which makes for nice press and publicity.
So we can work on language reiterating our interest in continuing to move in concert with the county.
So can I just give make a motion that the council would vote upon?
Let's vote on the second one. Okay. Let's finish this.
Yeah,
this okay.
Fine.
So, all those in favor in items number 2 and 3, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, that passes unanimously.
And of course, what are items 2 and 3? Let me see if I can go find out. But a cursory search of the city website's video has not really put me in touch with. I thought there was a screened version of those points, 1 and 2 or 2 and 3, whatever they were. These were I'm afraid it's going to be hard to piece these out. They're not on the city council agenda as proposed. The summary of what the council decided, which comes out some days afterward, has not yet come out. So I'm going to have to pass on this. Let's hear the rest of this. A portion I think is important.
Okay, go ahead.
I move that the council send a clear message to our county partners that we are committed to prioritizing the elements of our joint agreement and attempting to meet the target date for the camp closure.
I'll second that motion. Any further discussion?
Attempting to meet the target date. Now, this is the same target date that has been set aside. So there's a reason it was set aside, because the attempts to meet it appeared to be inadequate. She doesn't want to acknowledge that. And I think it's worse than that. She doesn't want to abandon it. And this is a concern I raised yesterday at the Conscience in Action meeting, and I'm raising it again, which is you're going to now hear the council unanimously support Matthew's language, which I'm afraid might be used as a direction by the police department to say, well, we're really still trying to meet this this deadline, and so you better watch out, you know, you better get out. I don't like the attempt to manipulate the language away from what was the clear language expressed in the earlier resolution, but by a divided council, 4-3. And sadly, no one else, well, Drew Glover does raise his hand here. We're going to hear what he has to say, too. Unfortunately, at this point, everyone was, I think, so tired or perhaps feeling so beaten down that they didn't really have a lot of good things to say, at least the council majority, that I think could actually have taken things into hand if they'd wanted to, although it's hard to really second-guess people at 1 in the morning.
Oh, Councilor Glover?
I'd add that in that statement to encourage the county to identify some potential safe parking places that have been identified by the community, like the drive-in or the Toys R Us parking lot.
And this is a kind of a... He got beaten down on the we didn't play it on this show, but he got beaten down on the Delaware Street, very minor, removed the signs because he didn't even get into the fact that they were illegal, which would have been quite appropriate to do, or the fact that it doesn't really change the situation out there at all, in terms of people are parking there anyway during the day, would just mean they would have to leave at night. That wouldn't have to leave at night and try and find someplace else in the wee hours of the morning. But he got beaten back on that. So now he says, oh, well, the county, let's have the county find some spaces out there, which is not within the purview of the city. So he is talking to a group of people that are going to be meeting with the county, and there's nothing wrong with adding that. But there, you know, and who knows? Earlier he may have added some direction to the staff to look for spaces in the city, although I think that was part of some of the resolutions that he had before, and to set up Delaware as a sort of an interim area for a few people with RVs or sleeping in their cars who can go and be there at night, provided they can't stay there for more than 72 hours, you know, or they're violating the law. But he didn't get that, so instead he's mentioning this, you know, get the county involved. Fine, that's good. But he doesn't correct this idea and clarify again about the Ross camp, where Matthews has said, we want to have the county assured that we're trying to meet the target date. But they're not. So why are they passing a second resolution that says something to the effect that they are? And why doesn't Glover object?
Let's separate. I agree with that, but let's separate them. And that's something that we're already exploring at the two branches. I think that's already happening.
First, I heard.
And so Cynthia agrees that she would that, but no, she doesn't want to include it. Cynthia Matthews, and Glover does comment somewhat wearily that if that's something that they're already working on, that's the first he's heard of it, since he's been working on a parking program situation. That's his interns are working on it. It's strange that they haven't brought it to him, but maybe they don't.
About it, so right on.
Exploring other alternatives, right? Okay. So, okay, we'll keep that separate, not accepted. Okay, all those in favor...
So they're punishing Glover again. They won't even add that. They're going to keep it separate, and you'll find out it doesn't get added by any kind of separate resolution. So Matthews just struck it. And Glover, instead of saying, no, I want to keep it in, I'd like to have it move by a 4-3 vote. He's, I think, still recoiling from the old guard's beating that they gave him over the last 2 weeks for having stood up and, you know, essentially criticized Matthew's phony agenda process.
Of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that passes unanimously.
And that passed.
Is there a different motion at this
unanimously? And that was that's a danger. The danger that they're letting the county know we're still trying to meet your date, having previously said there's no deadline. It's couched in language that says we're not going to bail on you in terms of finding resources. But why should they have to try to meet the date? Why? And the implicit answer is to please the county's really fervent and basic desire to get rid of the Ross camp, whereas the four council members on this council are saying our desire is to make sure that people are getting services before they get rid of the camp. That's the primary objective. And there is the basic conflict. And but if they come down with a unanimous resolution that still talks about meeting the target deadline, and there's no objection to it, I worry.
Point, or do we want to call it a night?
Now that is Watkins saying, well, do you want to add this business of look for... I'm not quite sure if she's referring to this, but she could be referring to what Matthews cut out of the motion, which is ask the county about the drive-in, ask the county about the about other parking spots, because they have... the county's a much bigger place than the city. It could be Matthews doesn't want those places anywhere. She has never expressed any strong desire for that. Often people will say, well, this is a joint city and county responsibility. Let the county do it. But they say that in order to defeat a particular proposal that's come up in the city. This was the case years ago when there was a proposal to set up safe parking spaces in the Harvey West area and some other areas in the... it was in the spring of 2000. And conservative council members... Matthews was on the council at that time, but I don't know what she said, but I remember that council member Hernandez, no longer around, that at least I haven't seen much of him, was saying, well, we could have a big warehouse where people could go. We don't need to do that. We don't need to establish any places where people can camp outside. We got this warehouse on the outside of town. I'd move we do that. But, of course, when they voted down the safe parking, it was actually passed at a first reading and then dumped in a second reading, similar to what happened to the rent control and the rent freeze last month. It got passed by a 4-4 majority, and then they chickened out, and they just tabled it, and it went nowhere after that. The safe parking plan in 2000, and, of course, the rent freeze is still in complete limbo, and people are getting presumably evicted and forced out of town with rent raises.
Can I make one statement for the record?
I'll go ahead and wait just one second. Were you trying to prepare a motion?
Yeah, I was just looking really quick. We got the resolution taken care of. We got the transitional encampments kind of taken care of. We got the...
I don't think any of these things have been taken care of in terms of specific proposals that he needed to have voted on the previous meeting, or at least at this meeting, and now they've been postponed to another meeting.
I mean, I guess, not now, whatever. No, I'll pass.
Okay.
And so he was given the option by Watkins, who, it has to be said, is adopting a less, okay, let's move along, and we'll have to take a vote on that kind of procedure that she's been using at the last meeting. So it may be that the criticism she received from people like, who are concerned about her attacks on the, I wouldn't say her attacks on Glover, I would say, although that became an issue too, but concerned that she would cut off speakers at the public mic, she would ignore council members who were raising their hands, she would speedily move along, even ignoring, not giving the option for council members to speak up on some issues. It seems like she's being a little more cautious about that kind of behavior, which is good.
Cool. Vice Mayor Cummings.
I just wanted to state for the record that just the fact that I was in opposition of the closure or the pulling of the signs down on Delaware, because as someone who works in that area and had gone out and heard the concerns of the folks in that area, I just want to point out that one of the reasons why I was uncomfortable with that site, and one of the things I expressed to a lot of people in the community, was that... when we make these kinds of decisions, we really need to make sure that we're reaching out to the community and involving them in the conversation, because many of the people who approached me about that, some of whom are my colleagues that I've known for a very long period of time and people I've been friends with in this community for over a decade, none of them felt like anyone had ever approached them and asked them whether or not.
And I think I may have talked about this earlier. Who can disagree with Justin Cummings on this in principle? But are you ever going to get any neighborhood to agree that folks can park their RVs there as a starting point? Are you gonna, I mean, you have the same problem when you're trying to open a halfway house or a shelter. You get this mass of fear and prejudice that comes out. And to respond to that rather than to the needs of the broader community to have these facilities available for people, and to claim that you're doing so only because you want to, you need to have people talk about it first from the warm comfort of their homes, while others are kind of roaming around at night with nearly empty gas tanks, trying to find a place to park where they won't get tickets. They will have their cars or their vans towed away, their homes towed away. Is, I don't want to call it disingenuous, because I believe, although I have no idea really, that Justin is being sincere here, but it's not reasonable, really, at the basic level to do this. You have to have a place for, particularly in an area where it's illegal to have those signs anyway, as I've said. And that will be, the question, of course, is to get the Coastal Commission to enforce that is the problem. You have vigilante NIMBY jurisdictions that are harassing people and find it's just fine to do that, just like you had people who are harassing people of color and still do all the time, or shoot them dead at a faster rate than they shoot the rest of us dead, because I'm not a person of color, at least not as dark as some. Anyway, that's what I got for the City Council. I want to see if I can find you a little music to break this all up with.
With a brand new sound. If you can't hear it, I'll count it down. We're shouting 1, 2, 3, 4.
We don't want blacks dying no more.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Black people always have been great.
9, 10, 11, 12.
We have too many blacks in jail.
What's the cry? What's the chatter? Pump your fist, everybody say.
Black lives matter. Black lives matter. Black lives matter.
Everybody
Black Lives Matter song that apparently was refused play on the radio even after hashtag Antoine Rose made it go viral, according to this 2016 posting on YouTube. The lyrics were included, and it was recorded and written by Pastor Chris Harris. Available by iTunes and Amazon. Black Lives Matter is a mindset. It's not anti-police, writes the Linear Notes, because all cops are not bad. Neither does any person or organization speak for all black people. Saying all lives matter when people say Black Lives Matter is just as insensitive as attending an HIV/AIDS conference and then saying cancer matters. And in other words, what are you doing talking about HIV and AIDS? I'm going to read some of the video that went along with this, because I think it's relevant. 25 ways you could be killed if you're black in America. Having your car break down, as Terrence Crutcher did. Holding a BB gun. Tyre King found that out. Riding in your girlfriend's car. Philando Castile got killed that way. Selling CDs outside of a supermarket. Alton Sterling. Selling cigarettes outside of a corner store. Eric, I can't breathe. Garner. Walking home a friend, Greg Gunn. Missing a front license plate, Samuel DeBose. Wearing a hoodie, Trayvon Martin. Riding a commuter train, a BART commuter train, Oscar Grant III. Holding a fake gun in a park in Ohio, Tamir Rice. Holding a fake gun in a Walmart in Ohio, John Crawford III. Holding a fake gun in Virginia, India Mbidi. Calling for help. Help after a car accident, Renishita McBride. Driving with a broken brake light, Walter L. Scott. Attending a Bible study class, Cynthia Hurd, Susie Jackson, Ethel Lance, Reverend DePayne Mitten, the Honorable Reverend Clementa Pinckney, Tiwanza Sanders, Reverend Daniel Simons, Sr., Reverend Sharanga Singleton, and Myra Thompson. Failing to signal a lane change, Sandra Bland. Walking away from the police, Mario Woods up in San Francisco. Walking toward the police, Lakeen McDonald. Running to the bathroom in your apartment, Ramerly Graham. Walking up the stairwell of your apartment building, Ake Gurley. Sitting in your car before your bachelor party, Sean Bell. Holding your wallet, Amadou Diallo. Making eye contact, Freddie Gray. Attending a birthday party, Jamar Clark. Laughing, Rakia Boyd. And you can check that out online. It's the Black Lives Matter song.